Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Hi, welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we are going to be talking with Azeelee Danto. She was the lawyer for the president of Haiti. He was the only elected president, democratically elected president in Haiti's history, from what I understand. And she was his attorney. And she's going to come on and talk about what happened in Haiti and how Haiti's being taken advantage of and all the details. I think it links in very well. It's an example of what John Perkins was talking about, the economic hitman, the confessions of an economic hitman, and what they do for the deep state to take control of resources in other countries and to control the countries. Haiti's a perfect example of this, and so she's gonna give the details of what happened. So you can put a face to what John Perkins is talking about in his economic hitman interview. And if you haven't heard that, I recommend that you go and listen to that. And then you listen to Haiti with an open mind, and Azeelee Danto, and with an open mind on how that relates to what he was talking about. And of course, she gets into the Clintons and all the nefarious activities they were doing, and Obama, the nefarious activities he was doing. And well, actually, Clintons were doing it on behalf of Obama. The UN, it's really a kind of a desperate situation over there, and very sad that we would be doing this. Especially when you think that one out of two Americans gave money to the Haitians after the earthquake. We're a very giving people. We thought our money, we were doing good things, but in reality, none of that, I shouldn't say none, very little of that actually went to help the Haitians. And they took advantage of them when they were the most vulnerable. And you'll hear all these stories. But like I said, this is a great example of what John Perkins was talking about in the Confessions of an Economic Hitman. So here now is Azeelee. So here now is Azeelee Danto.
Hi, Azeelee. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy that you decided to join. I think that you have a perspective. I've covered a lot of these issues, you know, the economic hitman with John Perkins and other things that are going on around the country or around the world, like within Syria. But you have so much personal experience of what we're doing in Haiti, and you have personal experience of what our specific politicians are doing, why they're doing it. And I want to get right to the crux of that. And I think I've been told you're the person. So I'm excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here. I've been watching some of your videos and love them, love the work that you do. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Okay, let's get right into it. Organ trafficking of children, sexual abuse, all that stuff. Rape and pillaging of Haiti's natural resources are some of the horrors that I hear are going on in Haiti. I want to get into some of these details so people can understand the depth of what's really going on there. But first, let's get into what organizations and powers are responsible for those crimes.
The status quo as put together by, in Haiti, this is how it's done. It's the U.S. Embassy, and, you know, there's an old Haitian joke that there would never be a coup d'etat in Haiti if we didn't have a U.S. Embassy. So they put together destabilization. The way the organizations are, the U.S. Embassy, which works through the USAID, which is the United States Agency for International Development, under the Secretary of State in America, that agency and the U.S. Embassy are the two sort of faces of American federal and military, economic, cultural power in Haiti. And really, it's a CIA front, and their whole purpose for over a century, more than a century, has been to keep Haiti contained in poverty, debt, and dependency. I got into Haiti. I was born in Haiti, and I was raised in America. And I actually went back to Haiti in 1994 as the lawyer for the first democratically elected Haitian president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who would who was at that time in exile in Washington because Bush the First and his CIA cronies had basically ousted the democratically elected president. And then Aristide would be returned by Clinton when he became president in 1994. And later in 2004, Bush the Second would also take down Aristide twice. So I've lived through two U.S.-sponsored CIA narco-drug trafficking coup d'etats.
So this is an example of how what John Perkins is talking about, how we go in and the economic hitman replaces their leader and takes over the country through the CIA and other nefarious means.
That's right. That's right. So popular democracy, like just like you could see with what's going on with Donald Trump, popular rule is not liked by the imperialists because they want to have their own puppet in power because they've created certain abstract ideas, certain policies that puts their value upon everybody else in the world. So Haiti is an agrarian society. 70 to 80% of Haitian people are farmers. But the United States want to make Haiti a marketplace for its transnational organizations. It wants to take Haiti's resources, and it wants to control Haiti's strategic position. If your audience look at a map, you will see that Haiti is right next to Cuba. And where Guantanamo is, you know, where they put the Al-Qaeda, you know, the United States has a 90-year lease at Al-Qaeda, at the Guantanamo. And right across from Guantanamo is Haiti and this Windward Passage. It's very important to the United States because that Windward Passage allows shipping lines in commerce to go through Cuba and Haiti, that shipping line, and go down to the Panama Canal and to the Pacific. Otherwise, you would have to go all the way down past South America to get to the Pacific in terms of shipping lines. So Haiti is a strategic important space for the, and since like the 1870s, the United States have wanted Mole Saint-Nicolas, which is right across from Guantanamo Bay. For almost 200 years, Haiti have not allowed America to have it. Today, they basically have all of Haiti. And it was done under Obama. But through the first two coup d'etats, it's a very slow process, but the United States plans, and this is what Americans have to understand too, because the United States plans for things 50 to 100 years ahead of time. So essentially, who are the organizations and power brokers in Haiti? Right now, Haiti is a UN protectorate. So Haiti is under U.S. occupation that is proxied out to the UN so that people would not understand that it's an occupation. They call it a humanitarian mission, but it's a Chapter 7 shoot to kill war mission.
Well, explain to us, because it's clear based on the information that I looked at that obviously we're not into humanitarian aid. I mean, after that hurricane and all the horrible things that went on with how the United States, well, particularly the Clintons and other people, dealt with the Haitians during that time. Can you give us specific abuses on the ground that's going on that clearly shows that we have no interest in humanitarian principles there at a large, but now the average American does. We sent a ton of money to the different foundations to help the Haitians, but people don't realize that money didn't go to help the Haitians. It went to a lot of other nefarious activities, and we just aren't doing humanitarian aid like we should be, like we say we're not, we don't have integrity. We're not doing what we say we're going to be doing. So can you explain what's really going on the ground with, you know, organ trafficking, child trafficking? You know, people understand taking resources, so I want to get into that as well, but we do it in ways that are more nefarious. We take advantage of people, and I want people to see that. And so if you can put a face to that and what we're doing in Haiti, that would be great.
Well, Haiti is special because it was the first to go into combat with the European powers and abolish slavery. So it's very, very important in that way. So Haiti abolished slavery in 1804. And so it's the second republic in the New World since the New World began, okay? This is, you know, not to discount indigenous cultures that were here before. But Haiti was the first place that the European came and enslaved people in the West, the very first place. It has always used the humanitarian pretext to enslave. That's just what they do. They use the humanitarian pretext to enslave, to take resources, and to dominate. So in this circumstance, when I came into the picture, like I said, Clinton returned. So Bush the first got rid of Haiti's democratically elected president. Then Clinton returned him because at that time we were dealing with the fall of the Berlin Wall, and everybody wanted to make, you know, democracy was the new word. So it was no longer we're fighting communism. The new word that the United States started using to destroy democracy was democracy. I mean, it basically, before the United States kept in power dictators in Haiti, the Duvalier regime from 1957 to 1986. When the Haitian people fought back and they got a democratically elected president, that the reason why the United States is concerned about Haiti, like I said, is because of its resources and because it wants to make an example out of Haiti. So they came in 2004. So we got our independence in 1804. They came 200 years later. Before that time, Haiti won its independence from France. We are on an island divided between Dominican Republic and Haiti. So Spain and France had control of that island. Haiti has all those resources that they want. They didn't like the fact that President Aristide had sort of gotten rid of the Eurocentricism that had been put into Haiti by the folks and the puppets. So they wanted they came in with the CIA. They came in with the NGOs. They came in with the drug traffickers.
Did he want his own currency? Was that what he was shooting for and didn't want to use the euro, or what was the deal with that?
Yeah. Well, what he just asked them, just basic things. It's so sad because so many people died for just this. He just asked for the minimum wage to be to raise the minimum wage.
Where was the minimum wage at that point?
24 cents an hour, 20 cents an hour.
And he wanted, and when was this, 19?
This was 1991.
And our minimum wage at that point was probably $5 or something, $7.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm talking about 20. He just wanted to raise the minimum wage. And I think he raised it to like $1.60. Oh my God. And this is really important, right? Because this week in Haiti, 25,000 Haitians went out into the streets asking for a raise in the minimum wage. And guess what they asked for? $1.60. For 20 years, the United States Transnational Corporation suppressed the Haitian minimum wage. Suppressed it. They had two coup d'etats to stop it. And we're talking about $1.60 a day. That's what they're asking for. It's 800 goods. But that's what Aristide had done back during his administration. And that so riled up the United States, because the United States uses Haiti as a bargaining chip. If it wants to get something from China or from Taiwan or Bangladesh, it'll say, hey, listen, okay, we control Haiti. We will give the jobs there as opposed to here. So you better keep your minimum wage at 20 cents. So these are the things that it does to us. That first coup d'etat cost about 8,000 Haitian lives in 1991 to 1994. And about 70,000 Haitians left because of the killings. And the United States interdicted them, and they were put in Guantanamo Bay. So before Al Qaeda, Haitians were the ones put in Al Qaeda in Guantanamo Bay. They were experimented on. They were given men were growing breasts. They just used them in all kinds of ways.
That's You're kidding me. So that we took them and did experiments on them. And do you have documentation to prove this?
Yes, yes. I mean, you just Google it. This was Guantanamo between 91 and 94. They put Haitians where they now put the ISIS, Al-Qaeda folks. Okay? And these were just poor people who the house was burning. I mean, the United States trains the Haitian army. And the Haitian junta, his name was Raoul Cidras. He was trained in Fort Benning and by U.S., just like they train all the Central American officers. And then they also trained, the CIA trained a group called FRAP, which was a death squad. And they were just killing people. If you were Lavalas, which was the political party of President Aristide, my former client, they just were killing you and intimidating you. And they
What did you do? Because you were at risk too, right? I mean, because you were his attorney.
Yes. But I was in the United States. I met him in the United States.
Okay.
Okay. So in 91... around 92 is when I met him in the United States. He was in exile, right? Haitians came together with a lot of different people, and they pushed. And one of the promises of Bill Clinton was that he would bring back democracy, and he would give due process to the Haitian to the Haitian immigrants that were put in this prison without a hearing, without, as you know, international law requires a hearing to see if there's some reason, if there's a political reason that you fear for your life that you're running. And under international law, if there is a political reason that you're running from that space, you're supposed to be giving asylum. But Haitians at that time were not given asylum. And this is in direct contrast, for instance, to the Cubans. So it's all politics. It's not human rights, okay? So the Cubans, the United States had an embargo on the Cubans. They didn't control their politics. So if a Cuban left Cuba and stepped foot into America, they were allowed in. But they call Haitians economic refugees, and they call them political refugees. But it was only because the United States, but it was the United States that had burnt the house down, and that's why the people were fleeing. So when Aristide came back the first time, this is what's really important for people to understand, because the black community stays in this kind of democratic plantation. I have a photo, an exhibit that I always talk about, or not exhibit, but a presentation. The presentation is called The Quiet Genocide in Haiti. You guys can find some of it on my Facebook page, Esli Danton, public page. It's called The Quiet Genocide in Haiti, from FDR to Obama, the UN, a criminal organization, from Lumumba to Aristide. So during that time, when the United States wanted to take control of Haiti, because Haitians had basically taken control of Haiti, they used humanitarian aid as a cover. So essentially, you have all sorts of trafficking, and I have to tell you a few things about how that works. All right, so the powers that be do trafficking by moving populations around in different spaces. I'm going to tell you how they do that. And also, when they destabilize, like the economic hitman talks about, when they destabilize a country, they do it with different things. They do it, for instance, through something called free trade laws. Neoliberalism. All of these are ways of destabilizing a country. Okay, so neoliberalism is an economic concept that says that no regulation, no capital regulation, so that if a foreign company makes money in Haiti, they can just take out all the capital. There's no regulation. There's no, you know, you've got to invest X inside the country. You've got to leave X, none of that. And they want tariffs lowered. So one of the things that Bill Clinton did, now it wasn't Bush, okay? It was Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton did was, before Aristide was put back into office, he was forced to first sign a World Bank IMF agreement that required that he bring down the tariff on rice. At that time, Haiti could feed itself and grew its own rice. Once the tariff went down under this regime, that he was required, regime of economic austerity that he was required to sign, once then big agribusiness from Arkansas could dump food into Haiti, and the local farmers can't sell their goods because the American rice is less expensive. So because of those policies, Haitians lost something like 850,000 jobs. That was because of the free trade policies and the privatization policies, because the United States forced the Haitian government to privatize state assets to the private sector. So the private sector became more important than Haitians themselves. And the private sector was foreigners that came into Haiti. So this is how it works. What I like, this is how the patterns work. There is a black intellectual called Neely Fuller, and he talks about imperialism and colonization and how the powers that be work. And he says that there are nine areas of human activities that are controlled by the deep state. I'm using that word. He doesn't use the word deep state. He uses another word. Those nine areas that they control, they have a narrative that is not the real narrative. They control economics, they control entertainment, they control education, labor, law, religion, sex, cultural, you know, how it works, and then war, how to go to war. Each of those areas of activity is about keeping the powers that be in power. So, for instance, in the United States, academia in the last, let's say, I don't know, 30 years have been absolutely regressive. I mean, they don't, they just are a mouthpiece of whoever is paying for their grant, whoever is paying for their dissertations. So you have a situation where, I'll give you a couple of examples. So in that way, when you have the entire society is about everything is fake, education is fake, academia, labor law. I mean, you know, ever since the Reagan, I don't know what it was that when, the air controllers, workers' rights, have been destroyed in America. Well, in Haiti, they were also destroyed. And that's how the system works. It controls the narrative, and so it controls the mainstream media. Now, I'm a lawyer, went to Haiti. Aristide had asked me, did I know any other lawyers? At that time, I was doing entertainment law, and I had no intention of spending my life here. I thought I would just do, you know, go to Haiti, be of assistance, because Bill Clinton actually said he wanted Haitian Americans to go down to help. And so I created an organization called the Haitian Lawyers Leadership Network. And the reason I did was for Haitians with an American degree and other international lawyers who were interested in judicial reform. If Aristide went back, what we were going to do was give our services 2 weeks at a time for free to help legislations, to help write legislation, to talk to the victims of the coup d'etat and give them a process of reconciliation and healing, and to have something called like the we don't have a defense bar in Haiti. So that's what the Haitian Lawyers Leadership was about. But when I got to Haiti, the United States Agency for International Development said to me that I had to work for them. I could not work for the president of Haiti, because they were only going to fund NGOs. So if United States is only funding NGOs, then and they control the NGOs. The NGOs are a non-for-profit that after a year goes to the UN, meets some requirements, and they're called non-governmental organization. But this is what the United States uses all over the world, these non-governmental organizations, to destabilize civil society and create civil society. It's George Soros' civil society. And we place, like I said, the public. So when I got to Haiti, thinking that I would do, you know, this was a great victory because Haitians worked so hard for the 3 years that Aristide was in exile to bring him back. But essentially what Bill Clinton was about was re-imaging the death squads as civil society, just like they did in Kosovo with the Kosovo death squads. They re-image it. They re-image the people that had done the coup d'etat and gave them NGO monies and tried to present them as real, legitimate politicians.
So the people that murdered,
yes,
8,000 people, they nothing happened to them. They actually were rounded up, given money, and now were controlling a lot of society.
They were trying. That's what the Bill Clinton return Aristide was about. I'll give you an example. There was a guy named Toto Constant. He was the head of FROP, which was the death squad during the coup d'etat years. They were massively raping Haitians, massively. And they were all trained.
What do you mean by raping?
Raping Haitian women. If you
really were, raping?
Raping, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Massively. These were the death squad, FROP, okay? I remember being in Haiti And the U.S., and this was like the return, Aristide had just returned, and we thought we were going to do something so totally different, that we were going to have community policing, that we would. I remember the U.S. ambassador held a press conference, brought the head of FRAP, that was the death squad, who turned out, if your audience wants to just Google 60 Minutes CIA Total Constant. The United States brought this man who's responsible for the killing of, like I said, 8,000 or more people, and he had a press conference, and he says this guy is a legitimate politician. He's going to run for election in the next election. The people ran the man out of the country and said no, of course. At that time, Lavalas, the movement against dictatorship in Haiti was really strong. And the world was different than it is today. So they ran him out. And guess what? The United States, who would not give asylum to Haitians who were fleeing the death squads of Total Constant, gave Total Constant asylum. He ended up in New York. And I'm a New York lawyer. So he ended up in New York right in our faces. All right. And this was a guy who had committed war crimes. Do you know Total Constant is now in federal prison, but he's only in federal prison because he was involved. All right. The other thing to understand is Haiti is a drug transshipment point. Because we have no big European father, because we are alone and took our independence by beating three European nations, we beat the French, the British, and the Spanish in combat, slaves, first time it's ever been done. So in the 15 Caribbean nations that there are, we are the only one that doesn't have a colonial parent. The United States, of course, embargoed us for over 60 years, longer than the Cuban embargo. So when Haiti became a nation, Jefferson, who was raping Sally Hemings daily, essentially said that you know we can't have this, and we had an embargo. The embargo made isolated Haiti. So as a new nation, if you can't trade, it's very hard to grow. So the people did self-sufficient farming. They did not. That's what we did for all these years. So the embargo that Jefferson put on Haiti didn't come out of Haiti until 1861, when there was the Civil War. And I say all this to say that when Aristide went back to Haiti, the United States essentially was re-imaging these death squads, re-imaging these Duvalieres, okay? And the people was fighting it. So from 91 till today, the people fought hard. But today, all the Duvalieres are back in power. All of them are back in power. But it took two coups d'etats. So the first time when Aristide came back, here I'm in Haiti, I have a list of Haitian American lawyers that I had, you know, had my whole office put together, and folks were excited about trying to, you know, get. But at that time, the United States ambassador said to me, essentially, I had a conflict of interest. I guess they felt I was competing with their NGOs. I said, but, you know, we're a voluntary organization. So they kicked me out of Haiti. I was an American.
Congratulations. That means you were doing something, right? So let me ask you, when you went in there, you were, you know, you're an entertainment lawyer. You're like, I'm just going to go and help a little bit, give back. And then you saw all these abuses. Did you just get emotionally sucked into the situation and now it's your life passion?
That's what happened. It was there was something else happening in America at the time too. By 96, the entertainment industry had gone the narrative that they were putting out was all this stereotype. It was destroying the black community. And I could not be, I was putting, you know, young artists on what I call the plantation at that time. And I just could not do it anymore. And I thought I would do something more, you know, go to Haiti and do something really, really good, really about social justice.
So your little balloon got burst. Your naivety, like everybody else. I mean, you go into the world thinking I'm gonna go do good.
I was gonna do good. I could not stay in the entertainment industry by 96. It was, the misogyny was so heavy. I could not stand behind what the music had become. The apartheid in the music industry was tremendous. And as a militant, as an advocate, I after the death of Tupac and Biggie, and I used to represent members of Public Enemy and some of these guys, I just could not participate in that misogyny. I could not participate in what I saw happening with the mass incarceration process. When Aristide was in exile as a writer, I wrote this piece called Haitian Women's Need No More. And when I wrote that piece, he asked to meet me, and that's how that happened. But when I got to Haiti, it was so amazing because I had always been black, and then they changed names. I was African American. Then when I got to Haiti, I was Haitian American. Like, okay. All right. So there's all these kind of hyphenates to about you that didn't, you know, that I was trying to figure out, what does this mean? So when I went to Haiti, it was the U.S. ambassador who basically said, we got to figure out a way to get rid of this woman because she's coming in with 250, a list of 250 Haitian American lawyers who are, at that time, that's what I had, who are licensed to practice law in America. That's really scared the hell out of them. And so a lot of things happened to me, and maybe it's not the time. Another time I'll talk about it, but essentially,
okay.
I was living in a hotel because I had no parents or family in Haiti. And, you know, there was a night when somebody shot my room. So all those things happened to me. And I ended up coming back to
your life was in danger and you needed to protect yourself.
The United States takes this, the CIA and the intelligence folks are very specific about what they want in Haiti. And so they have a pattern. The pattern is they have these overlords and the overlords are in maybe three different categories. They'll have, poor people that they blackmail and train as police, just like they train ISIS, they train the Haitian FROP, okay? Just like the United States trains ISIS in the Middle East, they train FROP. And then they would finance these things doing things that, you know, like organ trafficking, like drug trafficking, like arms trafficking. That's how the CIA and the deep states finances its regime changes or its black ops. And in Haiti, the second in command to the Haitian army, now all of the Haitian army officers were trained by U.S. and U.S. special forces. What happens is that when they train them, they give them things like visas. They give their families grants to go to college in America. They connect with them, and so they co-opt them. So these guys will never find that kind of offering in Haiti, and you really have to be very, very strong morally, intellectually, not to fall prey to these CIA agents' various ways of co-opting folks. So they protect their own.
Besides the fact that Haiti's geographic where they're located, what about Haiti do we care so much about? I know you were talking about the natural resources. Haiti is just filled with natural resources. Can you talk about that a little bit and why this, why the United States cares so much?
Iridium is a extraterrestrial, it's an asteroid that fell on Haiti. Haiti is a land of mountain. It has mountains of iridium. The United States have been carting it out since 1986. So that's why increasingly you'll see in terms of Haitian hurricanes that come all the time, the people are dying more because the mountains have are being carted out. So iridium is something like, one Haitian expert said that one ton of iridium is worth something like $45 billion. But they say we're poor. Also, not recently, but during the second coup d'etat, that's when Bush the son came to take out President Aristide because he was reelected again. So he was elected, brought back. And when he was brought back, Bill Clinton made him sign that he, you know, you're elected for a 5-year term. He was taken out like his first 7 months. But when he brought back, they told his time and said, no, they didn't told his time. They basically said, you can't go retroactively and do your 5 years. So when Aristide went back the first time, it was on the condition that he would sign all of these IMF, World Bank loans and privatization stuff, and that he would leave office within a year. So, and then he didn't come back until another 5 years. So Aristide was elected back in 2000, and the United States took him out in 2000. He went into office in 2001. They took him out in 2004. He only had a few, 2 years to go, because they needed to control and destroy Haiti.
How did they take him out?
Another CIA backed, and this one was really bad. This one, by that time, I knew what I was doing. The first time, I really didn't know what I was doing. I was just new to it, and everything shocked me. What the United States was doing just shocked me. You know, these are wealthy, educated folks, and I had come from that kind of thinking that if you're educated and you have resources and you're wealthy, why would you kind of pummel helpless people? And that's what they do. They pummel Haiti. So the way they took him out was they financed FRAP had been disbanded. They financed a group of people in the Dominican Republic. The way they do, like Sudan, when they wanted to, the way they do Syria, they financed a group of ex-FRAP, because you know when IRC went back, he demobilized the Haitian army, because the Haitian army was the source of all of our coup d'etats. So he demobilized them. So he, when he went back in 2004, and like I said, in 1994, he demobilized the Haitian army. The United States hated that because it had all its ranks of officers. So the second time, what the United States did was they took a group of, it was led by a guy named Guy Philippe, who is now, you know, he's a drug trafficker. He's awaiting sentencing right now in Miami court. Okay, they use these guys, and then when these guys like Noriega decide to do something that's not part of what they want them to do, then they'll face a life sentence in Miami for drug dealing. So essentially, and these Haitians never learn those just never learn. So. The way that they did it was they financed Guy Philippe and a group of what they call rebels in the Dominican Republic, gave them arms, and the arms comes from Israel. I remember when they were Uzis, now there's something called Galil, G-A-L-I-L. They're a form of assault rifle. The Galil is made in Israel. They provide them with arms, they provide them with funds, and they had them come in and they were like doing guerrilla warfare against the Haitian police, the real Haitian police that Aristide and the Haitian people were trying to do. We wanted to have, we know we can't do an army. How are we, you know, this little island that's smaller than you know, Rhode Island, how is that going to, you know, do anything? So we just were going to have a mobilized community police, just but the United States financed these groups. They shot they kept coming in and shooting the Haitian police until eventually in 2000, they were doing this like for a while, and creating all sorts of destabilization. It was very intense. The way they destabilize a country, besides the military part, where they'll finance folks like Guy Philippe and Guy Philippe's people in the Dominican Republic and have them come in and shoot policemen and try to take down Aristide. The other way they do it is they create these George Soros civil society groups that will say that Aristide is a dictator, and then they'll finance, and the group that does it, it's called the International Republican Institute. It's part of the National Endowment of Democracy. It's an NGO that's run by the U.S. Congress, both parts of the duopoly, and their whole purpose supposedly is about democracy. But IRI, the International Republican Institute, was run by McCain, and in 2000, they financed the same Duvalieres to say that Aristide was a dictator, Aristide was denying them human rights, and then they had Reuters, all of the mainstream media, AP, whatever, just keep repeating it over and over and over again. To this day, people actually think Aristide was a dictator like Duvalier. It's the same. They did the same thing.
And he wasn't. He was really trying to help his people.
Yes. I'll tell you, in 2000, when Aristide became president, the thing that really, really made them mad was that he asked for the independence debt back. And in addition to bringing up the minimum wage, he had done some pro-Haitian culture things. Here they are. When we won our independence, like I said, we won it from France, but we had to fight all these other nations, Britain and Spain. So essentially, the Jesuits came back into Haiti. They were, you know, they were the first humanitarian. Okay, so remember I say that right now, Haiti is under occupation behind a humanitarian front, and that humanitarian front is run by the UN, okay? But it is also run, okay, all the NGOs get their designation from the UN. They're called non-governmental organization, but like the NDA, or IRI, they are governmental. They have a particular partisan interests. So this humanitarian front continues to cover for the terror, the organ trafficking. They participate in it, as a matter of fact.
So are they actually, do they control it? Do they act like they're a humanitarian front? All this stuff is going on. So they're a cover that enables it to happen.
That's right. That's right.
So is Haiti really used as this outpost of crime? I mean, for children, for drugs, for...
Yes, yes. It's an international crime scene. I tell you, it's easy for the CIA because, you know, they use our... okay. Haiti is a black nation. Everybody knows that. We were a nation that was put together by enslaved people. So the United States had to change that in some way. We had a 19-year U.S. occupation from 1915 to 1934. They essentially put Haiti back in slavery during that time. Haitian, of course, fought back, and we ended up, you know, getting rid of the occupation. But this second occupation started in 2004, on our 200th anniversary, and it's going on now for 13 years. But it's not a direct occupation the way the first one was. The first one was very direct. America knew there were Marines on the ground in Haiti. They learned from that. They don't want public opinion or public eyes. They don't want public eyes in Haiti. They don't want white folks like you to understand what's going on. I'll give you an example. If you look anywhere on the internet, you see I say, what does Esli Danto do? Esli Danto exposes the media lies about Haiti. People are given a narrative, an official narrative. That official narrative keeps them from going to Haiti and seeing what's going on. That official narrative also allows NGOs to raise money. For instance, they say Haiti has less than 2% forest cover. That is a lie. Haiti has about 32% forest cover, which is the same as Germany, the United States, there's another country I was going to think of, Ireland. But development agencies will use this lie to go raise money and say they're planting trees in Haiti. Nobody looks at it. They say Haiti's just violent, 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 okay? The country next to us, Dominican Republic, is almost four times as violent as Haiti, but they don't have a UN occupying force. Haiti's violent rate right now is 10.2. When the UN came into Haiti in 2004, let's say 2006, our violence rate was 5.7 over 100,000. That was our violence rate, and it was equal to that of the United States. But we had a UN shoot to kill. So they make you think we are just cannibals, that we are going to, and that is, that narrative allows them to make money, raise money, and commit all kinds of crimes.
So you said that we created an occupation in 2004. That was under, so you said that we take 1,500 years. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, ask your question.
So who, it was a 1,500 years. So all the presidents are in sync with this, whether it's Clinton, Bush, or Obama, they just push it through.
Yes, except that my analysis is that it's worse for Black folks, both in the United States and in Haiti, when it's a democratically elected president in America. And the reason I say that is, let's look at just the facts, right? Obama, for instance. Like I said, you know, I go all the way back to FDR. FDR was, you know, lionized in America because of the New Deal and so forth, but he was known, and you all can just Google it, he was known as the Butcher of Haiti.
Well, I just did a report on the Great Depression, and there was a lot that came out on FDR and what he did here, but it was really covered up with PR. But the Democratic Party was the party of the Ku Klux Klan, and they were the racist party up until recently. And right. The Republicans were all about civil rights. So there's some weird shift that turned.
Yeah, they say it was that phone call that Kennedy made to Martin Luther King. It just like switched things.
So all the people switched because of one phone call between two people.
That's what
he said. Right.
Yeah. In my experience, I call them the duopoly. The duopoly is equally imperialistic.
Agree with that.
The establishment is not looking out for the interests of the masses. It's looking out for its own interests. But the reason why the Democrats are worse for the Black community is that they get away with more because of the narrative. The narrative says that they're more into social justice, they're more into workers. That's the narrative, and because of that narrative, they just get away with more. That's why.
And to be fair, they might be on the grassroots level, but not when we're talking about the big strategic moves.
Certainly not in they have no difference in the political arena. During the Kosovo War, for instance, I think that was 1999. It was the right wing that opposed that war, not the left. It was like the libertarians and folks.
That's what's going on right now with a lot of things.
That exactly.
Because the right is really against the war in Syria. We're really against a lot of things. I'm saying we because I think I don't know what I am. Because I always thought I was, you know, left, far left almost when it came to civil rights and all these other things. Now I'm like, maybe I'm far right. I don't know. That's why I'm independent. Because I just want everybody. I'm a humanist. But I don't like all this crap the government's putting on us.
Exactly. See, so right now the Democrats is the war party. Totally, without a question. At a point in this election in 2016, I run the ESLI network, and I said, listen, we've got to do something. We this Democratic Party, because Obama was so awful. He was awful in Libya, caused the death of so many black folks, caused the death of so many folks in Yemen, Somalia, expanded AFRICOM.
Why was he so much worse than a normal, what we had normally? You know what I mean? He was supposed to be this beacon of hope.
I think he was the Manchurian candidate. I think that
he did, to be fair, he at least put an image on Black Power, which is great because that crap, people are humans and we should all look at people for character. Mm-hmm. But maybe this is good too. Black people can be bad too. They're not all pro-black. You got to look at the character.
This is one of the days I will call myself a minority voice. I mean, a minority. I am a minority voice, even in the black community, with regards to Barack Obama. The reason people who are on the Democratic plantation, I say, black folks, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's the media. It's Hollywood. It's what they are brainwashed to believe. Instead of like looking at really what's going on, they go and they're herded into these kind of narrative, the official narrative. When Obama came into office in Haiti, for instance, we had had, you know, Trump and Clinton. I had had, the first coup d'etat, then the return to re-image everybody into George Soros civil society so that they can slowly bring back dictatorship. Then we had another second coup d'etat. So by the time Obama came, it was like, oh my God, maybe he'll be different. Even though I said I didn't know this America. I didn't know this America he was supposed to be representing. I just don't know that America at all. I know the America that mass incarcerates. I know the America that didn't let the veterans from both wars have any rights. I know the America that redlines. I know that America. I didn't know that America he was supposed to represent, but I was happy to try to meet it, and so I did cast a vote for Obama in 2008, but within 6 months, just like with Trump right now, okay, I haven't said too much yet on Trump because I'm going to give him the opportunity to, we don't have any choice. He is still anti-war, and that's really important for the planet right now.
Yes.
And I wish people would really understand that. I mean, really understand that. Because if we had had Miss Hillary Clinton in the White House, we probably would have already been in World War III.